Hi, and welcome to the NBA podcast. My name is Morten Jensen. As you can tell, I'm not Brian Toporek. He is off doing dad stuff. So instead, I brought along a guest of the show. I did a two-hour live stream with him at the opening of free agency. Mark Deeks, one of my favorite NBA analysts. Mark, how are you?
Yeah, I mean, dozens of people will have seen us on that stream, literally dozens. So this will be nice for all 24 of them to get back. I'm good. I'm oddly blue for some reason. The lighting in this room has left me looking a bit like an Avatar character going through heroin withdrawal. But I'm fine, honestly, despite my jaundiced appearance. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm tired. I'm busy. Work is busy, which is great. I mean, I know with the pandemic that there are a lot of people struggling to find work. So I am not going to sit here and complain about being busy. I keep getting told that getting busy is. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just having a violin lesson. That's what I do. No. The struggle is real. Your first world problems are yours and yours alone.
This is true. And of course, just so people are caught up on what we're supposed to be talking about, Mark, we're once again going to be talking about free agency. Pretty important to get that out of the way as well. So we are a little over 2 weeks into it, and it seems that most of the cap space has been dried up. Seems that most of the major moves has been made outside, of course, of Damian Lillard and Ben Simmons. We'll get to that later on. But let's start, Mark, with the Chicago Bulls, because when you and I did the live stream on YouTube, we only saw the Lonzo Ball news. A day later, it was announced that DeMar DeRozan is joining the Chicago Bulls via a sign and trade. He got, I think, 3 years and $82 million, which does seem like an overpay for someone of his caliber, but a lot of people have reasoned that this is the price of doing business and getting in back into relevance if you're the Bulls. Do you agree with that assessment?
It is kind of the price of doing business if it's the price that DeRozan refused to sign less at, if it was signed for any less for. However, I'm not quite sure who the Bulls were outbidding, because like you said, cap space was gone. There wasn't exactly a great deal of sign and trade partners out there. If there were, we didn't know about them. And the 27 and a bit million average per annum cost that you're paying for DeRozan is a price point reflective of his past, not his future. This man is aging quite well, but also aging. I mean, what's he's done 12 years now in the NBA. Increasingly without a position. He played the four last year, which is fine in theory, but you give up rim protection and rebounding. If he plays the four for the Bulls, then you're going to have to worry about a front court of DeRozan and Vucevic defensively. I don't like it, if I'm honest. I don't mind the acquisition of DeRozan in the sense that it's a huge infusion of talent on a team that didn't have sufficient talent for these last few years.
Right.
And there was a use it or lose it thing going on there with Satoransky's contract, with Aminu. And Lord knows that having made the move for Vucevic, they clearly are prioritizing some kind of significant short-term improvement to get themselves out of the lottery picture and constantly picking ninth. But that doesn't mean it had to be DeRozan. It doesn't mean it had to be DeRozan at that price. There will be significant offensive diversity to come with that. There is the potential between him and Vucevic, and also Lonzo up to a point, to get Zach LaVine in the offensive role that will better suit him. It's not that he can't be the guy, but when he is the guy, these all-around game suffers, he may flourish from that. The Bulls may go on to win 45-50 if you're optimistic. But then what?
Right. That's the big question being asked. I think a lot of Bulls fans right now are basically satisfied just with a competitive product as a first step kind of scenario. Most are insinuating that the current roster needn't be the same roster in 2 years' time. I personally do find it somewhat difficult to find proper trade ideas out there for DeRozan. I don't think you're going to get a positive return on his contract at the very least, so you may have to sit through that one, because as far as I know, the entire 3 years are fully guaranteed. So there isn't any like little thing you can do in year three where he's like partial guaranteed or just it's a team option. It seems like they are going to be I was about to say stuck with him. I don't think that phrasing is quite right, but it does seem like they are going to be together for at least 3 years, right?
I don't know about the full three, but the fact that it is a three-year deal is a virtue. There is no such thing as an untradeable contract when it's in its final 24 months. We've seen this time and again. We've seen it with Russell Westbrook now twice. Okay, they're not great deals, but they're deals. We even saw it with what was the most outlandish contract back in the day, Rashard Lewis. That got dealt. Gilbert Arenas, that got dealt. Yeah, they got dealt for each other, but they got dealt. Nothing is immovable. Now, I'm not putting a projection of DeRozan's contract into that sphere. It's not as if he's going to suddenly stop being good. He's not.
Right.
It is, however, a cost-benefit analysis when you consider the cost of, A, his actual salary, B, the stuff given up in trade, which wasn't nothing. I mean, they were useful assets in some kind of deal. And C, the lost opportunities to make future deals. That is all quite significant there. It all adds up. It's not all exactly objectively measurable either, but it is there. And so, given all that, you need to be pretty sure that DeMar DeRozan is going to make your team in the short, medium, and hopefully even long-term futures significantly better to justify it. And I don't know if that's the play you're getting. However, in a bid to be positive, you are going to get someone who's going to significantly improve the team with his offensive game, his unorthodox offensive game that continues to work. There is that. The Bulls, just to repeat what I said before, because it is the primary motivation here, I'm sure, do get a significant infusion of talent of a man who was very recently an All-Star. They've now done that twice in a few months. That is out of character. That is a huge leap forward. If we talk about deals of such caliber, of such a status with other teams, we worry that they're mortgaging the future. The Bulls didn't really do that because whilst they've given up some future assets and future flexibility, none of it was premium. So they haven't mortgaged the future to improve the present. And as the people you were talking about there described, the roster will look very different in 2 years' time. Every roster looks different in 2 years' time. There's no point going, this is our core for 5 years, because it doesn't work like that.
Right.
Ask Larry Markkanen. However, even then, even with all those caveats in place, at his price point for his game, I don't like it. I think 3 years and 60 is probably where he should be. And that 7-8 million per annum difference is most of an MLE. So it's a 16, it's a significant difference.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about as well in regards to that contract is there you had a lot of people with league sources come out afterwards and say, well, part of the reason that that contract was so substantial could have been because the Bulls and DeRozan agreed to it before free agency launched. And basically they kind of discovered, well, that we grossly overestimated this market pre-free agency. And like if they had just let the chips fall when they might have ended up getting DeRozan for a significantly cheaper deal. Do you buy into that?
Well, it's certainly possible. It would be a pretty bad state of affairs if that were to be something that was investigated in addition to the Lonzo Ball tampering accusations. I mean, of course, things are known beforehand, but it wasn't a... there was a lot of money moved in this last free agent market, but rarely, if ever, can you point at a contract and say that's bad, like we've had done in previous years, ones that were bad from the minute go. Whilst a lot of players changed teams and a lot of money was spent, it wasn't spent hugely. There wasn't that kind of money out there, and there wasn't the kind of players that merited it either to a great degree. So compared to the rest of the market and all the contracts we've seen signed in the last 2 weeks, it doesn't look good, that one. It is redeemable. And I can certainly understand that they agreed the price point before they agreed the deal, and you then do kind of have to honor that. But I'm not sure why it all had to be fully guaranteed or non-incentive laden or anything. They haven't given themselves much protection there, other than the fact that it is only for 3 years.
So you mentioned Lauri Markkanen. Let's pivot into him because obviously he's still on the books, so to speak, in Chicago. He's a restricted free agent. The Dallas Mavericks seem to be sniffing around him, and the Bulls are apparently, according to rumors, I think it was Tim Cato of The Athletic who reported that the Bulls were interested in Maxi Kleber as a trade piece. Does Markkanen make sense for Dallas? Does Maxi Kleber make sense for the Bulls? What do you think?
Markkanen makes sense for Dallas in the sense that he's on a similar timeline to Doncic, and he is going to look considerably better offensively when paired with a player like that. The pairing with Porzingis and the idea of them as a trio is a little different, but I wouldn't project too much into Porzingis' long-term future with the team anyway. Hint, hint. In terms of what makes sense for the Bulls, Kleber can help any team make any team better. He's a good role player. He's only a backup, which is not what you, he's a backup who's older than you think, because he's not been in the NBA very long, but he didn't join at a young age. He'll provide a few decent years of Tice-like play, which is fine. It's better than nothing. I personally would... I do understand why Markkanen wants to go. He's openly disenfranchised, yeah, and he hasn't really developed. So from the fan base's point of view, it's not going to be a huge loss either. But I would kind of like to see him just go back, and not just on the QO, but on a decent deal, because there's still something there. Even if he doesn't project beyond the player he is today, the player he is today is a fifth starter with a quality outside shot who still has upside and a little bit of versatility to his game. He may not be as good as he allegedly claiming to be in the free agency market, but that's a negotiating tactic. That's different. I'd like to see him come back on a longer term deal. He still has an awful lot to prove, but if his beef was with the his time with the Bulls over the last few years, well, it's a new management structure now. It's a new coach. It's, well, apart from last year, it's a new timeline, as we've seen with the aforementioned trades of Vucevic and DeRozan. So if that's in the past, perhaps the angst can be left in the past as well.
It does seem like that this issue is closely tied to the current state of affairs. So it would behoove him maybe to move on if that's the case, in which, like, let's assume he ends up in Dallas, by the way. You brought up the pairing with Doncic, and I think that's a very reasonable point that you make, because Markkanen has never played with an elite playmaker before. I mean, the Bulls over the past few years has basically operated without a specialized playmaker. That's been a job that everyone has handled like intermittently. And now that he would be going to Dallas, if this scenario plays out, like, he'll finally have someone to consistently set him up. I mean, how does that look for his trajectory moving forward?
Well, put it this way, Dallas acquired Tim Hardaway Jr. as a bad 70-something million contract,
yeah,
and have subsequently resigned him as a good 70-something million contract, because given the presence of Doncic, his gravity, and the offensive unit around, which last year wasn't as good, but which we must remember 2 years ago was historically good when they had Seth Curry, suddenly Hardaway and his confident shooting, let's call it, and efficient shooting, of course, suddenly he's now an asset rather than a liability, and a big asset as well, and an adequately paid one. And Markkanen can have all that too. He is not just a shooter, but he is one. He'll be a better one when he's catching seven passes a game in the pocket, in the corners, and on the wings. He can offer a little bit more beyond that. I do stand by what I said about the less than ideal fit with Porzingis, particularly when it comes to the defensive end, but Porzingis isn't long for that team, surely. So even if he is, it could work in theory. So it would suit Markkanen very, very well. I don't know if there's going to be a particularly good deal that the Bulls can get back. Kleber is solid, yes, but you're giving up on what was your future asset for a backup in his prime. It's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. Kleber is a good player, and he will have resale value himself due to his contract, which isn't even fully guaranteed. So it would suffice. It wouldn't be bad business. I still think there's more that can be gotten out of the Lowry in Chicago situation, but it must be said that I say that as an outsider. Clearly, there is internal, I won't say strife, that's a bit of a grand word, but there's
disagreements.
Discontent, at least, which I cannot even pretend to know the specifics of. If his beef is with the way things currently are, I don't see why that would be, but I only see that as an outsider. So take that for what it's worth, which is very, very little.
Right.
As is everything, I say. Why am I here? I don't know. Just add some blue, I think, to the broadcast.
Yeah, I'll tell my editor. But it's interesting, though, because like when you bring up Kleber, when I see Kleber now, I think he would be a tremendous asset for Chicago's second unit in particular. I mean, they right now their primary backup at the big spot is Tony Bradley, who I actually think they got on pretty good value, all things considered, 2 years.
Oh, very good value, yeah.
Right, minimum. Second year is player option, but still, I mean, that's solid value for someone who is just that statistically productive all the time. And they just need a seasoned four man, someone who can just play a secondary big role. I mean, I like Marko Simonovic, but I question whether he's ready, especially in a win now system, which I think the Bulls have clearly pivoted into. So Kleber, in that sense, I would imagine, would help things quite considerably if you look at it through the lens of being a bench performer.
I wouldn't go as far as to say considerably, but he will help. He's a good, solid, consistent two-way player, limited, but stays within those limits. A little bit of burst, a little bit of shooting, a little bit of defense. Yeah, he's good. He's pretty good. He's not going to move your needle, though.
Interesting. So let's pivot back to the Mavericks, because one of the things that I wanted to bring you on as for as well is basically have a pretty wide discussion in terms of Luka Doncic. Like, how do you build around him? Because it seems like this has been a thing that Dallas fans have really tried to wrap their head around. It's like, how do we optimize Luka? We kind of know what he is, despite the fact that he's only 22. He's going to get better, obviously. Some people, players with such high intelligence, basketball intelligence, are bound to get better substantially as they age. But we still have this grasp of what he is. So what kind of player should the Mavericks try to identify to bring alongside him? What kind of archetype do you think would fit in Dallas? Or archetypes, maybe?
What's the archetype that fits alongside any ball dominant superstar? You just happen to want a perfectly efficient offensive player who can play on and off the ball and also contribute with defense. The same thing everybody wants, always. However, in Dallas's case, much as Luka is and forever should be the man, his usage rate was enormous. And it's a little bit too enormous. It's not that he doesn't merit it, it's that he's just going to wear down. So a little bit more playmaking, ball handling, pick and roll action, and breaking through the first line of the defense from the backcourt would not go amiss. You also certainly do need shooting alongside that. And like I said, we saw in the, what was it now, 2019-20 season, when they had the historic offensive rating that came from the spacing of Hardaway, of Seth Curry, and others, but particularly those two. So if you could just somehow get both of those with a little bit of interior defense, good luck to you. I don't think they're that far short. I think the Porzingis issue is, it hasn't really progressed. They still are basically taking it in turns in offensively. They're still putting in, look, I'm no coach, I don't know, but I do know the numbers suggest that constantly giving him post up and elbow touches is not the most efficient way. That guy should be running the court on the roll and spotting up. But even then, you'd have issues with Luka having too much half-court creation. So they do need to diversify that beyond just getting Luka to do everything. He doesn't have, I mean, he will break down everyone apart from LeBron does. But they're not that far short of getting the right pieces. And who knows, perhaps some of their younger guards that they have now, Jalen Brunson, Tyrell Terry, could go on to be that.
I mean, it's interesting you go in the direction of guys who are, you know, not necessarily bit players. I think that's too harsh. But do you think there's a need for another, you know, star player next to Doncic, or is he that specific kind of a player where you actually need to prioritize just fits, even if it isn't fits that comes with all-star titles attached to their names?
Everyone needs a star. I think if Dallas is to win a title, they probably do need that too. However, we need to operate on the basis that might not be possible. Look, if they can get someone like Ben Simmons, all right, that will be good for them if Porzingis adapts accordingly. Markkanen, if they get him, he could potentially grow into that. They may have to grow one from within rather than get one on the market. But yes, they need a star. Everyone needs a star. I was trying to look at how they could take what they've currently got work the margins so as to be able to enjoy better medium and long-term futures.
Long-term, however, like if Dallas is going to compete at some point in time, they will need to go from hitting in the margins, which I absolutely agree with you, such a wildly important fact, to also swinging big for a star in some capacity, whoever that is. Like personally, I kind of like the idea that is being floated around Dallas Twitter a little bit. Like they know it's not realistic because Paul George is not going anywhere, but it seems like he has been identified as the archetypal player who, again, I realize he's rather unique. Like, who else is out there who has a game similar to
Paul George like player? Right. There's 10 or 11 to choose from, you know.
Right, but if there are players who at least resemble him in playing style, not necessarily statistical production or star quality, of course, but I understand like the offensive side of the ball, someone who can play off the rock, who can really space the court, but also is athletic enough to get into the paint. Again, just that this is kind of goes back to your point that everyone wants someone who can play on the ball, off the ball, play defense, rebound, pass.
Correct.
Right. And it is extremely and exceedingly difficult to acquire, of course. But and I
it's
find
why, it's why the sorry, it's why the Clippers paid what they did for George. It's why the Bucks paid what they did for Holiday, because that second tier star who can do a bit of everything without needing to be the man, but who contributes in all other ways on both ends, is invaluable. Dallas needs one. Yes, every team other than Milwaukee needs one, basically. I mean, the Clippers have one, but they need good health. Everyone needs that.
Yeah.
So Dallas needs that as well. But there does need to be some plan Bs.
Yeah. When I look at their cap sheet and I look at their long-term future, just also just in terms of trade assets, it doesn't feel like they have a whole lot to offer. Like if a star is made available on the trade market, it does not seem to me as though they can come in and make a substantial offer that can't be trumped by at least a handful of other teams as well. So that's another concern.
Which is why the what I was saying about having to adjust your aim downwards, maybe for the best. But look, they've got good players. It's a roster up and down that's good. There's not a weakness there. Right. So it's far from a bad situation to be in. And we've seen now for what the 350 years that we've been following this sport, quite how much the market can change and how quickly. So you know. Something can and will come up within perhaps even this coming trade deadline, perhaps next summer. So they do need to remain in acquisition mode, but not with any too great sense of urgency because there's a big window here.
Ironically, DeRozan was one of the players who was initially identified as a potential Dallas target. Would he have been? Due to the price point, or the due to the price point, or due to the talent level, or
the fit? How do you defend anybody with that core of Doncic, DeRozan, and let's say Porzingis? They each have their strengths, and there are some decent. Porzingis can protect the rim a little bit. Doncic is no weak link defensively, but that's not competing with the Holiday and Antetokounmpo core. That's not competing with the theoretical Leonard and George core when we talk about star, superstar, two-way cores. So, no, I don't think that would have done.
So let's pivot into the Knicks instead. Obviously, since you and I did the live stream, they picked up Kemba Walker, 2 years, $16 million. I think all were guaranteed. Initially, it was reported as a one-year deal, but apparently it got turned into two. So I've seen a lot of people be split on this. Knicks fans are just deliriously happy, which honestly, I think they deserve to be. It's been such a long while for Knicks fans before they really had a chance to find optimism in their team. So good on you, Knicks fans. But I've also seen a lot of skepticism, especially around Kemba Walker's knee. That said, I mean, with this financial commitment, which isn't really that substantial, again, 2 years, $16 million, like, you got to swing at that every single time, no?
Yeah, of course. He's not what he was. He never will be again, but he's good, and he was relatively cheap, and I fail to see the problem.
Right. I'm looking at it from also through a spectrum that they re-signed Derrick Rose. They also have Emmanuel Quickley, so if they need to give Kemba some time off, they have perfectly suitable replacements for those periods of time. Like, it's not like they're going to be lacking in the point guard department.
Correct, and you're going to be a little concerned about the health medium term of a Walker and Rose duo,
right?
But that is not a reason not to do this. Of course, you get a player like Kemba for $8 million. Yeah, the previous contract was an overpay. He doesn't have the hardiness, the health, and also doesn't quite have the burst and the agility that he did. But he's still very good. He's not top tier, second tier, third tier, but he's a very good player for a very good price. So whatever they need to remedy going forwards, that's not the problem.
So what is the best case scenario for this Knicks team with a healthy Kemba Walker? How far? And also, by the way, they got Evan Fournier in free agency. Let's not forget that. Like, what is the top tier maxed out potential of the Knicks this season, pending health, positive health, rather?
Probably about what they did last year, simply because you're really going to struggle defensively with some of the lineups you're going to put out there. You're trusting an awful lot to the rim protection of Noel and Robinson. And of course, there's plenty more areas of the courts to defend than just that one. Now, none of that is an argument against what they did. I think it was a decent return. I think it looked bad for a bit before the Randall and extension and the Walker news, the two main bits, came in late on. I don't think it's been a bad offseason whatsoever, but I don't think there's scope for too much improvement considering the personnel that they have in terms of both their age and their defense and their fits. Mind you, I have been wrong about the Knicks for 12 straight years now. What's one more?
So one of the things they also did, they re-signed, as you said, Nerlens Noel, Derrick Rose, and Alec Burks. I think individually, each contract were fine from a value perspective. I wonder if collectively, that's, of course, a lot of money to put on the books. But and I wonder what that means for their like ceiling moving forward. But at the same time, and you kind of alluded to it previously, that this market wasn't ripe with superstars or all-stars for that matter, or you know, a lot of high quality players. It was a little bit of a weak summer when it came to the free agency pool. So could they have done better, or was this basically the best that they could have done?
It's pretty good. And also, it's not for nothing that, like you say, this was last year was the first good vibe year that the Knicks have had for quite a long time. So there's value to be had in running that back. Now, Charlotte did the same thing in whatever year it was they made the playoffs, and then they it must have been 15, 16, they massively overpaid everyone, a massive spending spree, put themselves right into salary cap hell. So there is certainly a risk to overpaying for a low playoff seed. But I don't think the Knicks did that. You know, I don't think these are bad contracts. How much did Burks get again? Remind me.
I think it was 3 years, $30 million.
There you go. So that's an average player salary for a good sixth man type and spot starter who does some quirky things, but whom can always power his way through a slump. So, yeah, I like their business. And let's not forget that due to the newer and more flexible extension rules under this latest CBA, they have been able to tie on years to Randall, where once he would have headed into free agency. So they've got the right pieces for a decent team. They need a lot to make the leap. But decent isn't bad. It depends. If you're in the middle on the way down, that's a problem. If you're in the middle on the way up, or at least having been at the bottom for a long time, it's pretty good. It's pretty good energy. Yeah. Let's get some excitement in the garden again.
And also, those contracts are easily movable. I mean, first things first, I mean, they're only 3 years. So like you said, as long as you just get over year one, or there's 24 months left, like those are tradable. At the same time, I don't anticipate, pending health issues, of course, that a guy like Alec Burks or Nerlens Noel are going to see a significant decrease in production or talent. Like Derrick Rose is a little bit up in the air. He's got a significant injury history, and he's also getting up there in age. He's still somewhat reliant on his remaining athleticism. So for me, he's a bit of a wild card, but the two other ones I think are pretty safe. High value contracts that can be moved if need be.
Is Derrick Rose 4 or 5 years younger than us?
Derrick Rose is 2 years younger than I am. So it will be 33 going into the season.
And he's getting up there in age, you say? Well, that's good. Yeah, it's nice to know that our NBA windows have finally shut.
Right.
I mean, to be honest with you, not just talking about the Knicks, but looking at the league in general, it's really hard to find an untradeable contract. I mean, we would once have said it was Al Horford got dealt. I'm not saying they're getting dealt for great value, but they're getting dealt. I mean, who else is there? Everything's tradable because contracts are shorter than they used to be. The days of giving Malik Rose 7 years are gone. It's not like that anymore. Contracts are shorter. Teams are a bit more wise and less urgent. The salary cap has assets going with it, such as the room exception that makes it more desirable. It's just not what it was. So, yeah, we needn't worry too much about tying in mid-range salaries because they can always be shifted.
Right. Well, I mean, you're right, but I will say, I mean, in 2016, it got a little bit overboard. Like, teams got a little bit too trigger-happy.
Yeah, massively. But that was 5 years ago now, which in NBA terms is 100,000 years. Yeah. So it's not what it was. It never was. By the way, when you talk to your editor later, can you get that bit where you just said, you're right, and then cut that out and send it to me so I can make it my ringtone. Thank you.
I will.
Thank you very much.
And by the way, happy belated 37th birthday.
Well, that was unnecessary, but thank you. For my birthday this year, I decided to make my face blue. It's really bugging me. I don't know where it's coming from, but hey, there we go. That is not a blue light, as you can probably see. And for some reason, my face has come out like I've got some kind of serious skin condition. I mean, I'm ginger, but that's different, you know?
Well, so you're talking about untradeable contracts, but I can't help but bring this up then. Why couldn't the Oklahoma City Thunder trade Kemba Walker then?
Well, they could, but why should they?
Because
presumably, what else are they going to spend it on over the course of the next 2 years? Look at the timeline they're working on with all those picks dot piled up. Could they have attached some of those to move it on? Yeah, but why? Yeah. They got one for taking it on. They were able to get a massive buyout. All right, so they've still got a lot of dead cap on the books.
Right.
Fine, you're paying $100 million for your roster regardless of whom you're paying it to. That's the nature of the minimum salary cap. So why give up assets to shift that contract just to spend that money on other things that aren't going to move the needle either? They might as well buy it out. They're very much in a position of acquisition, and it would undercut that to be paying to get off of deals that they already knew they didn't want but weren't too bothered by. There's no reason for them to give it up, really.
That's fair. I think the idea
there was also no reason it should be said for anyone to take it on, knowing that the buyout was an option. So why would you trade for Kemba? If you wanted Kemba, just say to the agent, I've heard you might be getting a buyout later. Then that's it. You don't need to trade for the big deal. You can sign him to a smaller one, as New York did.
I think the idea from OKC's side was that they wanted to take him in, and because they obviously got a first for taking him on, and they did with Al Horford, where they did the same thing, and then they got a first for trading him out. I think that was the ideology going into this, that they wanted to somehow, some way, use Kemba Walker to squeeze out two first-round draft picks, and they just kind of reached the conclusion, well, if we are going to move him, it will be... You know, it'll be at a cost for us because there's no way in hell that we can
exactly. So that's not worth doing. Right. Horford was acquired on the same basis, perhaps that kind of worked out. In Kemba's case, there's not that kind of prognosis due to his health, and so it's fine. They'll swallow that cost because it's worth it to them, because it doesn't change their timeline at all. It doesn't change their spending power at all, because their issue is much more one of a roster crunch than anything. So why not buy out the guy, save whatever he gave up in buyout? It was about $20 million, wasn't it?
$20 million. He actually gave up more than he signed total for the Knicks, yeah.
Yeah, that's commonplace, but not usually to the choice of that amount. $4 million is quite a big chunk of change. I mean, I've never given up $20 million in a buyout. 10 or 15, yeah, but never 20. So it's a big $10 or $15, that is. So that's a big saving, but it opens up a roster spot. And with the how many, I'm not good with numbers, it's about 137 first round picks they've got in the next 5 years from
somewhere along that,
yeah. Other teams of the roster still only going to be 15 with two ways, so they need roster spots more than anything. I mean, if. Look at the Grizzlies Clippers deal last night of Bledsoe for change. I suppose, could hypothesize that Oklahoma City could have got something similar, but then they need three more roster spots.
Right.
I'd just take the buyout, to be honest.
Yeah, and especially since he was willing to give up that amount of money, but that's fair. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you just brought it up. That this wasn't really on the agenda, but what did you think of last night's trade? And let's get this out of the way first. It was Eric Bledsoe for Rashawn Rondo, Patrick Beverley, and who else? I don't remember.
Daniel, I always get the name wrong, but Daniel Aturu.
Aturu,
I don't know how you pronounce it. I only ever see them written down and heard on commentary, so I always get the pronunciations wrong. It's fine. It's the Clippers save a chunk of money for a possibly marginal, possibly even non-existent upgrade, but they will be hoping... Right. That a more engaged Bledsoe will be a much more impactful player than he was last year when he was just straight up bad. The Grizzlies didn't want Bledsoe anyway. They save a little bit of future money. They get a free look at Aturu, who's a reasonable prospect. They may be able to retrade Beverly. I imagine the Rondo is just going to be a buyout slash waiver situation, but that's fine. Yeah. They got a smaller sunk cost for him than they ever had for Bledsoe, which is a much bigger sunk cost. So, I like it for the Grizzlies more than the Clippers, but
agreed.
The Clippers weren't the only player they were given up that they really wanted was Beverly, and he is, I don't know why I say past his prime, but he's getting there. Much as he was a fan favorite and has been a good role player for some years, you needed an upgrade at playmaker. So I do see it for them, assuming Bledsoe gets better. If they made that trade for the Bledsoe that they had last year, then they lost.
Right.
Yeah, so they're going to tread some water inevitably due to the Kawhi situation, but that's not a reason to stop making acquisitions for the future, because they will be good again. Barring disaster that you cannot legislate for, they will be good again when Kawhi is able to take the court again. It may not slash probably won't be this year, but it will be the next year. He's made an investment for a few years now. Paul George committed to the team for a few years prior. Dashi too. The rest is profit. So they will be good again in this incarnation. And whilst Bledsoe, the acquisition of him does look like probably a one-year deal. It doesn't have to be. And even if it is, then Beverly and Rondo were there anyway, and they were going to have to move Arturo even at the deadline to save on their enormous luxury tax bill. So they're still in an acquisition mode, even though they're almost certainly not going to be competitive this year, because why not? They're trying to contend right for a title here. One injury need not change that.
So, Mark, one of the biggest, honestly, questions remaining in this season, or offseason rather, is Ben Simmons. He still hasn't gotten moved. It seems like he's kind of hell-bent on moving. There are, again, these are rumors that are just floating around that he wouldn't report, that he's ignoring calls from Philly. Like, these are not substantiated by any kind. But if there's any truth to it, the situation seems pretty dire. So, I mean, what's the game plan for Philly here?
Oh, he'll be moved. It's when, not if, surely. So we will have seen the same report about how they were demanding the what's become the contemporary package of choice. So all the picks, up and swaps. We've seen it now for, we saw it for James Harden, we saw it for Paul George. We saw it for Jrue Holiday.
Jrue Holiday, a little bit of Westbrook. Yeah.
Yeah, and now we're seeing it allegedly asked for Simmons, when we all know that he's not of that caliber. But that's a negotiating position. You start high. Someone's going to get desperate. Someone's going to bite. Even if we're talking about teams like the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have barely changed their roster now for quite a while. Apparently, it's not easy to change because they're quite cap-strung for a team that's not high up. But also, they do need to, and they certainly need to address the power forward position and have done for a while. Simmons would fit very nicely, I think, alongside Karl Anthony Towns. They will be in the bidding. Teams such as potentially even Dallas that we talked about, who need that one extra star, which Simmons could be. He's not yet, but he could certainly be. He's certainly good. They will be in the bidding. Someone will get desperate. Even if it becomes a swap for someone like Pascal Siakam, someone will get desperate. The fact that the bulk of free agency is over does not mean that roster turnover is settled down. There is still plenty of scope here. And Philly can be patient, because whilst they lose a bit of leverage in the sense that we can all hear the same thing about how divorce is inevitable, and whilst we all see that the on-court chemistry between Simmons and Embiid is far from ideal, and while we can all see that he is an individual talent, has not progressed all that much over the last few years, we also all see that he's good. They see that too. He's tied down long-term. They don't have to be impatient. And so they won't be. So they can take it a very high negotiating position and wait for someone to meet them as close to it as possible. So it will happen. It might not happen soon. It might happen mid-September. It might happen later in the year. It might be a Christmas time deal, as we've seen before. I think Harden was traded around about then. It might happen by the time we finished editing and publishing this. It will happen, almost certainly. But they do have the leverage, the time, and the patience to hold the carrot up really, really high.
Yeah, I mean, his remaining contract is 4 years, correct?
I'm going to pretend I know that off the top of my head and go, yes, I can't. Dude, I'm nothing if I can't look it up. The idea that I know a lot of stuff is lunacy. What I have is a lot of screens and the ability to navigate the internet really quickly. I cannot remember stuff off the top of my head. Let's work it out. When was he drafted? 2016. So then 4 years, 2020. He signed a 5-year extension, didn't he? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So you're right. I actually
younger
looked
Mark
up
have
while,
known
you,
that,
while you were rambling.
Seven, yeah. The younger Mark would have straight off the bat, but I'm washed up, dude. It's over. It's over.
Well, see, I also have dual monitor set up, so I was looking it up during your frantic rant, and you're right. It is a 4 year 4 years remaining on his contract.
When you say you're right, what you mean is I'm right, as in you, Morton, were right. You're the one that said it. You're the one
you confirmed it.
Well, you're the one that put a number out there and stood by it, and so you deserve the credit. But I will happily take it.
I'll take the applause as well. We'll split credit. I'll take 12% of the credit.
I imagine this is what it's like in a nursing home. Anyway, carry on.
But you're right. Him having 4 years remaining on his deal, that gives Philly tremendous leverage in the sense that this is not an Anthony Davis situation where the guy can just basically leave for nothing. Like, this is a situation where they can, I don't want to say squeeze the lemon because Ben Simmons is no Anthony Davis, but they can at very least wait on a proper offer. Now, in terms of just someone panicking, someone getting desperate, I wonder what the biggest Ben Simmons specific desperation trade package is, because I don't think it's going to be a Harden return or a Drew Holiday return.
No, it won't.
Yeah. No. But if we take it, like if we look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I actually agree with you, I think he would be a pretty good fit there. What's the deal? Like, what is the raw parameters of a trade that makes sense? I mean, I've seen people mention D'Angelo Russell, but I don't think that's a viable option simply because of the relationship that he has with Carl Anthony Towns. They're best friends. I have to assume that Towns would just really be not satisfied with giving up one of his best friends.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they pursued Russell as much as they did, was precisely right, because of their relationship. So I agree with you there. That won't happen. It's not easy in the case of Minnesota in particular, because you would think that being near the bottom of the NBA would give them quite a lot in the way of assets, but it hasn't, largely because Jarrett Culver hasn't worked out, but also they're not replete with assets such as other teams. So him in particular might be difficult. But we talked earlier about teams targeting two-way stars who can do a little bit of creation and also finish themselves. Now, Simmons is not ideal there. We all know he can't shoot very well. I'm not going to belabor that point.
Right.
But at the same time, we also know that he's an excellent and versatile defender, that he can be excellent in transition, that he can score in the post, which is not something he's able to much do with Embiid there, but we've seen it done. And so he could be that player. He could be that third-tier star. We can't project too much on the shooting ever coming around because there's not a lot of prognosis for doing that. But even so, there's still growth to be found in the areas of his game that he already has. Even if he doesn't expand it much, he can be a better and more confident finisher. He can be the other half of the pick and roll a lot more than he currently is. He can be the roller rather than the dribbler. He can handle in transition. He can bring it up. He can do some basic playmaking in the half court. He can go on to be that complementary third piece that a team such as, I don't want to harp on and keep saying Dallas, but let's say Dallas could, in theory, benefit from. He could benefit the Utah Jazz in a similar way, for example. There's suitors out there. It's just a question of finding one that is on the right timeline with the right pieces.
If you're the Timberwolves, do you consider moving Anthony Edwards for Ben Simmons?
I've never thought about it. Personally, yes. But if I was Philly, I wouldn't want that. So I don't know if it's a starter.
Well, I think the idea would be that you could reroute Edwards into something. Maybe you could expand it into a three-team deal. Basically, the raw parameter being, you know, outgoing the Rookie of the Year runner-up, and then in comes Simmons. And then, yeah, you kind of have to finagle something there from the perspective of Philly, of course. But
yeah, potentially. But then as, look, I hate to sound negative. I'm not particularly big on Anthony Edwards. Okay, I realized that he did put in quite a lot of volume in his rookie year, but it's very hard for me to look to him and see anything other than Ricky Davis. So I would.
That's rough. That's tough. Okay.
Well, I don't mean it in a harsh way, in that Ricky Davis was a bit too maligned, but at the same time, he was inefficient and ball dominant. And I think we have similar shortcomings with Edwards. Now, he was better as a rookie than I thought, but also his metrics do measure out to be pretty negative overall. So it was a very suboptimal fit in terms of both talent and roster construction in Minnesota for him as a rookie. It kind of looks like it's going to be the same again as a sophomore, unless things change noticeably. I appreciate he's not had optimum circumstances in which to thrive, and also that he is very young. But as a prospect, I'm not convinced, certainly as a number one pick. Anyway, I digress. If you do construct a deal from Minnesota's point around loosely Edwards for Simmons, then you've taken away your biggest piece of upside. So Simmons doesn't have that upside because he's 5 years into this now. So I don't think they would do it on that basis. I'm sure they would certainly look to do it, but I think they would look to do it in addition to a pairing of Edwards and Towns rather than instead of.
You don't think it would be enough of a carrot just because you pivot into sort of a win now thing?
Is Minnesota in anywhere near the position to win now thing?
No, but I mean, with the acquisition of Simmons, you would at least have Simmons, Russell, and Towns, who are bordering their primes, which theoretically would make them more of a win now candidate, even though I completely agree with you that that would be a little bit of a fool's gold errand.
In the Western Conference, where you can double your win total and still miss the play-in. So, no, there certainly should not be too much urgency in Minnesota. Yeah, they need to start moving some pieces around. I mean, we did comment before about how there's been little roster turnover. But that's not the same as there should be urgency to completely go off piece. They still need to know what they have there, particularly in the case of Edwards. So, no, I don't. They certainly do need a remedy to the power forward situation, but not at the expense of the only hope that they have.
I'm intrigued that you're opening the door for Simmons playing the four, because it seems like whenever I bring that up to Brian, who is probably the biggest Sixers fan ever, that gets closed pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, in as much as it doesn't really matter, he's a point guard power forward, is he not?
Right.
It's a increasingly positionless league, and this man is the epitome of it because he can play all over on defense and hardly anywhere in the half court offense. I mean, he can play a more traditional four. You can put him in the post. You can have him regularly on as the role man. He can defend most fours. I would see him as a potential four, especially in a modern day where DeMar DeRozan types are playing power forward. Yeah, absolutely. Brian is infinitely going to be more versed on that than I. So even though he's an idiot who should never be listened to, I would listen to him over me on that one. But miss you, Brian. But I don't see that as being a problem. It's a question of whether he can match up defensively and whether you can space sufficiently around him offensively, which, given that we're now in the four or five out era, you should be able to do in so many different lineups.
Yeah. I think part of it is also him actively wanting to play, you know, that stereotypical point guard position. We saw the same thing. Now I'm going way back to when you and I were kids, back to 2000, to the year 2000, actually, where Jalen Rose coveted the point guard position in Indiana. I know you remember this.
But hang on, I was being harsh when I said that Anthony Edwards is Ricky Davis, but you just liken Ben Simmons to Jalen Rose, and that's fine, yeah?
Well, no, but the positional demand that I need to be a point guard. I need to be – look, if we draw current era comparisons, we can talk about how Anthony Davis refuses to play center because he wants to be seen as a power forward. You know, even though that position has become – those positions, rather, have become very interchangeable. My point is this. If Ben is just absolutely determined to be, you know, a quote-unquote point guard and the guy who sets everything up 80-85% of the time – like, what does that mean for also his trade value? What does this mean for his future? I mean, does he have to like pivot his mindset into thinking a little bit more open and just in terms of copying, for example, a Giannis Antetokounmpo who plays all over the floor? Like, does he need to embrace that sort of positional diversity?
I think it's a bit nebulous in the sense that it doesn't really matter. You are defined positionally mostly by what you defend. B, he's not exactly that player now anyway, so it's not as though he would need that to sustain. And C, does it matter nearly as much as whether he can get to a situation where both he is an individual, his statistics, and his team are better for it? So I really would hope he would not be too fixated on that. I do take your point about Anthony Davis's increasingly stubborn refusal to play the center position and thus the need to trot out players such as Andre Drummond alongside him, which is not the best for the Lakers composition as a whole. But I don't think Ben Simmons has that kind of clout, that kind of talent, and hopefully not that kind of motivation.
Well, let's hope not, because it does appear to be an issue, at least from what I've heard over the years from Mr.
Well, look, maybe it is. All right, I come at things purely as an outsider. I do that on purpose because then I can just give an unbiased opinion rather than I heard something from my one source. Oh, now I'm biased right. That way. So I deliberately come at things as an outsider, and that means I'm going to be wrong a lot. But at least I can be consistently logically wrong, which is somehow better in my mind. But as an outsider, I wouldn't want that to be an issue, because if you get Simmons in a position where he can be better, then that should really be what matters. And that position is for him to not have such a primary creating role in the half court. Or if it is going to be that, he's on a team with better role options, and he needs to get better at it as an individual. So why can't that be a quote-unquote power forward? Does it matter? It doesn't, does it?
Yeah, no.
Like you say, Giannis is technically a power forward. So what? He's not Anthony Mason out there, is he? So RIP Mace. So what difference does it make? Hopefully none.
Right. And also, I think the presence of Russell could actually benefit him greatly. I mean, I off the top of my head, I don't remember Ben ever having played with a guard of similar raw talent. As D'Angelo, really, just in terms of shot making ability, ball handling, passing vision. I mean, that could benefit him a lot.
Potentially, if they can develop the requisite pick and roll chemistry.
Right.
You're right. I can't think of either of them having a pairing like the other for that. But I'm not going to get too fixated on the idea of Simmons playing for Minnesota, because it's going to be difficult to construct a deal.
Right. Well, so let's end the Simmons segment on that. What team out there is more likely to make a trade for Simmons then? If not Minnesota?
I don't know. I was sitting here thinking, I hope he didn't ask me that. I don't know. The LA Sparks, Fenerbahce, I don't know, something. Black Ball Town, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. You tell me. I'm the guest. You're the talent here. which team do you think will be the best one? A trader, Ben Simmons. That's my host voice.
That's it's probably Portland, right?
Ultimately. Are you saying that purely because you want to segue into a discussion about Portland?
Well, so actually, no. It is true that we're going to be talking about Portland right after the commercial break. However, that is not why. I just think there's so many loose components on the Blazers that just kind of makes it, let's say, creates more odds of him ending up there as opposed to the Minnesota Timberwolves, for example, or the Dallas Mavericks, where I wonder if they have the assets for it. I mean, at least the Portland
it would be better for him. Would be better for him. It would be good for Portland because their roster is too heavily imbalanced as constructed between the backcourt and the frontcourt.
Well, hang on with all the golden nuggets right there, because we just have to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back with a chat about the Portland Trailblazers. All right, Mark, Portland. We got to talk about the Blazers. Damian Lillard more or less insinuated before the start of the offseason that he wanted some drastic changes with the Blazers this year. He wanted to see a much improved roster, and I think the answer to his wishes has been because it's basically the same old roster as it was a couple months ago. There were no drastic changes made. Where the hell do they go from here?
Well, the problem that they face is the one they faced for the last few years of this team now, which is that the clear-cut way to improve the team on the court is to move CJ McCollum, who, of course, we are led to believe is Dame's best friend. McCollum's good. It's not his failing whatsoever. He's a good player. His contract is big, but he justifies it with his production. He can get his own. He's going to age quite well with that shooting ability of his. It's not his fault. It's merely the fact that it's a little bit superfluous to have him and Dame on the court, considering that McCollum is essentially a lesser version of Dame. I've oversimplified that for the point of making an argument, right. But you take my point. They are shot-creating, isolation-heavy guards. it does mean that Portland's spending power and assets are taken up in that superfluousness in the backcourt, leaving their front court too short. They have some decent players in the front court, but when no one can take a dribble outside of the painted area, they're limiting their offensive creativity, as Terry Stotts found out. And the remedy for that, particularly if we were to talk about a Simmons deal, there's surely scope in theory for a McCollum and Simmons deal with the specifics to be worked out. Lord knows it's one that's been talked about for years. It's one that people keep coming back to because each fits the profile of the other team's needs quite well. But that's Dame's boy. If you want to please him, it's very hard to justify trading his boy like that. They haven't done it. They've shown pretty much no enthusiasm for ever doing it. Right. And that is perhaps how it's going to stay. So then that leaves a difficult situation where you're looking at trading. You haven't got an awful lot else to move. You'd have to look at moving Yusuf Nurkic. Now, he's an injury factor. We know that. But he's also the ultimate small ball punisher. He's a lesser Jonas Valanciunas, but he's a good player himself. He's on a tradable contract, but it's not one that's tied down long term. He's not a needle mover. How much value are you going to get for a player like that? Then you've got Norm Powell, who's the backup guard, who's not going to... You start struggling after that. With Norm Powell, with Robert Covington, right, with Derek Jones, you've got good players, but you don't have answers to any of the problems that Portland found that they were struggling too much with last year. And you're not going to be able to get them in this carnation just by changing out Harry Giles for Greg Brown, just by letting Carmelo walk. That's not going to change things. So, pass. So, I'm not a problem solver. I'm a problem pointer outer. That's what I
know. But you point them out pretty well, because you're absolutely right. I think also, if you move McCollum, even though that would be a tough pill to swallow simply because he's that good, you could at least mimic some of the actions by putting Anthony Simons into that role. I realize that's not optimal. You probably want to do it with Norman Powell, but there is that guard depth there. If you pivot away from Powell instead and keep CJ around, then you could effectively have Simons take over Powell's role. I mean, there is a guy there in Simons, who I think can come in and absorb some of those available minutes, thus allowing them to move out of certain guys. I think it just boils down to what's the market. Norman Powell re-signed, was it 5 years, $90 million, if memory serves, was it not? Somewhere along those lines.
I refer you to previous discussion about how I don't know anything unless I've got it in front
of
me.
And we were covering it live 2 weeks ago, though.
Yeah, but I've just been so busy, you know, as far as you know. He's resigned for a good amount of money, and he has earned it. He was once a bad contract himself. We talked about Tim Hardaway earlier. He was a bad contract. He got dealt as one. He redeemed it. Sorry, he didn't get dealt as one. Hardaway did. Powell just redeemed it with greatly improved play. He's a good player, but he's not a needle mover, and he won't be able to be... you won't be able to construct a trade for such a needle mover around him alone. And the Blazers are hardly replete with assets in order to sweeten too many deals. So it is going to be difficult.
So let's workshop that idea. Like the CJ McCollum, Ben Simmons, should it be a straight up deal? Who should add something? If not, what are we looking at here?
We're losing already both of your Blazer and Sixer fans, because we're not breaking new ground here. This has been a pretty hackneyed topic of discussion, and you'd have to think, or I would at least posit the idea that if it was going to happen, it would have done. Then again, things have changed with Simmons after last postseason, so maybe it is now on the table in a way that it wasn't before. But hey, I like the idea of Simmons with Lillard. I like the idea of Simmons with Nurkic, sort of. I think it greatly rebalances a roster that is far too backcourt reliant, as said upon before. You could get Simmons his primary and secondary playmaking spots alongside Dame when you're also talking about, you know, Covington and Jones and just role players that don't create or handle outside. You could get a nice role for Simmons there. How you'd package that deal, I pass.
Right.
I'm going to keep passing. If you don't have any opinions, then no one can be a twat to you on Twitter. That's what I've learned.
This is true. I love your Dennis Schroeder mentality.
You take that back.
All right. But is it wrong that I love that deal more, or like that deal more for Philly than I would Portland?
Nope. You're right to. Bear in mind, however, the difference in age. I know you're a big fan of McCollum. He should be. He's good. And he's a good citizen on a decent... It's large, but it's a productive contract. He's a player that would benefit any team in the league, full stop. but he's quite a bit older than Simmons. So yes, this is peak McCollum, and it shouldn't be peak Simmons. So do bear that in mind.
That said, I think it's reasonable to wonder just how much Ben Simmons has improved over the first 4 years of his career.
Yeah, he hasn't much. That's not to say that he won't, though. He did miss 1 year. He did. Right. He has had to pair with Joel Embiid, which has never been the optimum fit when we talk about spacing. He has at least improved defensively, whilst the offensive game has perhaps regressed in some ways. The defense has got better. So there should be a lot more to come from him than there has been. And I appreciate he has stagnated rather than continually grown. If he hadn't stagnated, then we wouldn't be talking about him potentially being dealt. But he is still young. The impudence of youth passes eventually. There's reason to believe that if you're taking him on, you're not taking him on as is. You're taking him on as is with potential upside.
Yeah. The thing is, though, if that potential upside never really shows, that would be a pretty difficult position for Portland to find themselves in down the line.
As opposed to what, though? As opposed to now? Well, now it's a pretty different position for a different reason.
True. That said, it's 4 years of Ben Simmons. And I agree, you can get out of that contract, not saying you can't. But at the same time, you're still going to use at least a couple of years to try to figure out once and for all, what do we have here? In which case, when everything is said and done and the league has sort of like read the book on Simmons and knows that it seems like we can't move past this. Like he is what he is, which is a bloody good defender, by the way, and a tremendous rebounder, strong court vision. Like he's always going to have a pretty decent baseline there. So I'm not going to ever label him as a bad player, of course, but under those circumstances, he would be, in my opinion, definitely a little bit overpaid, if not significantly so. Can the Blazers move on from one cap hell to another while still getting the best out of Dame's last years? I think that's probably the pressing issue for me. It's Dame. It's the fact that he's, 31 now? He's in his prime. You kind of want to use the next 2 to 3 years to really optimize him and his skill set. Do you put yourself into the best situation of doing that by somewhat gambling on acquiring Ben Simmons?
No, but I never said it was Simmons or bust.
That's true.
It's logical, perhaps, but it's not binary in the sense that they either trade for Simmons or give up Lillard. That's just something we've created here. Lillard will age quite well. Yes, he's, I believe, is it 13 years in now? That's quite a lot, but he will age quite well simply because that shooting touch won't leave you, even if the mobility and stamina do. So to get someone who's not too young but not too old so as to extend that timeline and potentially open up a window in the twilight of Dame's career in a Chris Paul style would be a way to go. I think Simmons fits that profile. I think it would help on the court somewhat, but I don't think it's all in on him or nothing. I don't think that at all. I mean, not when we're in a world where Pascal Siakam could be available, for example. So it's not nearly that binary.
CJ McCollum is 8 years in, not 13.
Who said 13? No, Lillard was 13, not McCollum. Oh,
apologies. I thought you said McCollum.
I ain't that bad, dude.
No, but even Dame.
Wasn't he sixth pick?
Dame is 9 years in.
Where the bloody hell did I get that from, then? I am that bad. I used to be good, man. I'm washed up.
Well, it does seem like he's been in the league for. He came into. He came
I was
into the
NBA when you said 31, but he was the rare upperclassman pick, wasn't he?
He was. Weber State, 22 years old when he came in. He's an old 22. One. Yeah. It's because he's 31, obviously. So most guys come in at 18. I totally get it, but. Yeah, I definitely look.
I wonder
at this,
why
this.
I'm not as popular as I used to be. Carry on.
Well, you're popular enough to be on this show. That counts for something.
Hello, Denmark.
Yeah.
That's more Midgard for the win. He signed, didn't he? Somewhere he signed in Holland today, didn't he?
He did. Yes. C
Leiden. Have I pronounced that properly? Asbjørn Midgard.
I don't know if Asbjørn is listening in, but I'll definitely send him the link to this one. He'll appreciate that.
Hello, Asbjørn. I'm trying to get your name right, but I'm English. And
that was very well. That is a lot better than I actually heard. You just did it right. That was very well done. Yeah.
Asbjørn.
And now you kind of lost it. You did it right before.
Well, what was the difference between that and the one before? That was the same.
You said it quicker. It's Esbjerg.
Esbjerg?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Hello, Esbjerg. Enjoy. Good luck.
Enjoy Holland. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Congratulations to Esbjerg Mistgaard. And also, congratulations, Aoife Lundberg, to return to CSKA Moscow.
I didn't see that one. Okay.
He's back in Moscow, and I think next year is going to be the year that he breaks through and makes the league, because
what age would he be then? 27?
He's going to be 27 right before the start of this year, so it's probably
going to be next year. 27, 28 next year. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it's...
Well, he's put himself in contention, so fair enough.
He has. He's been playing really well. So this is not something I get to talk a lot about with Brian.
Yes, like, welcome to the NBA show with Morten and Mark, who are talking about Danish players that haven't yet to play in the NBA.
The NBA Summer League counts pseudo.
Why not?
No, but going back to Portland, when I look at that roster, I'm just overall uninspired. Like, even if you move CJ McCollum and stuff around for Ben Simmons, you know, you were talking about hitting the margins recently, and I wonder if that's something that they have done well enough over the years to have gathered a roster that you can really, you know, find bit players in. Because right now I'm not super optimistic about, you know, the end of the bench. Like, I like Ben McLemore for the minimum. I like Cody Seller at the minimum. That's fine. Does it move the needle any? Not sure. Derrick Jones Jr. was pretty underwhelming in his first year. Maybe there's a bounce back. That'd be great. But what is his realistic upside there? Like Robert Covington, solid two-way guy, really did not have a good year last year at all. Like, what is the best potential here?
Yeah, Covington was a bit of a letdown. They certainly need more from him if there is to be any kind of window. They suffered from a lack of front court athleticism last year with the Nurkic-Kanter pairing. Cody Zeller will help with that. Jones, I think, perhaps slightly more highly of than what you've just said there. But more than anything, those guys are role players that need something to roll around. So, yeah, I keep coming back to the idea of an imbalance in the team as constructed, where far too much is relied upon the backcourt creation and the front court is spotty with its spacing and defensively suboptimal as well. Yes, Zeller won't change that of his own back. It's a decent bit of business. When it comes to working the margins, they put themselves in the hole with the egregious 2016 spending. And that's technically, yes, that's all now expired. But the price there is still being paid because they weren't able to make subsequent acquisitions in the following years that they can still be reaping the benefits of now. So, yeah, I do agree. I don't dislike their moves in isolation that they've made recently, even such as signing Harry Giles last year to a minimum salary is evidence of the fact that they can see quality. It just doesn't always cohere that well because Giles just compounded the front court five spot defense problem. So, pass. I finally found that catchphrase I've been looking for. Pass.
So I think the apron this year is 143 million, right? Somewhere along the lines of that.
The tax is 136.414, isn't it? So yeah,
all right. And the Blazers right now, according to SpoTrack, active roster cap is at 134 million, which means that theoretically they should still be able to take on a sign and trade contract, if I understand the
as long as you finish below the apron. Yes,
exactly.
Oh, I know where you're going.
You know, you absolutely know where I'm going.
Bring it full circle.
Well, I mean, you just brought up the lack of spacing in the front court. Lauri Markkanen. I don't know what they give back. Like Derrick Jones Jr., maybe? I don't know if that, I don't know if that makes sense for him, but they would definitely get more shooting in the front court. They won't get a legitimate big man.
If I was Portland, I'd trade Derrick Jones Jr. for Lauri Markkanen, definitely. As Chicago, I'd rather have Lowry back on the QO for roughly the same amount of money as you're paying Jones for 1 year. But if it's better than nothing, which is still an option until it isn't. So, yes.
Right.
Well done for bringing that full circle. You are an absolute pro.
Knowing the Bulls, they would probably ask for Robert Covington, though.
I say you're a pro. You did earlier use the word... to describe the team. So, you know, there's work to do. We'll put it in your feedback form.
Well, I mean, let's be realistic here. We live in a world where Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless make more than the NBA average, actually, more than the NBA minimum. So
I've never heard either of them use a fart sound to describe an emotion, though, before. So,
That's so funny, because whenever I hear Skip Bayless talk, that's all I hear.
Sassy.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Yeah. No, but I'm saying the Bulls might ask back for Robert Covington based on his somewhat weak season. And if I'm Portland, I don't know if I'd do that.
No, I wouldn't, because you have invested in Covington. You need more from him. So, you know, Covington, again, is in his prime, perhaps based on what we saw last year, slightly past his prime, but he is in theory a very good player to pair with a Lillard and or a Lillard McCollum backcourt, even if we didn't see all that much of it last year. So no, neither would I.
Mark, I think we've reached that point where I've run out of topics, to be perfectly honest with you. So thank you so much for coming on the show and for saying pass 157 million times. So given that Brian has become a father to a very wonderful baby boy named Noah, I'm not assuming that he's going to be as available moving forward that as he once was. So you have an open invitation to come back whenever you want.
Well, let's let the viewers be the judge of that. And I look forward to hearing from all seven of them very soon.
Nice one. So, there's seven viewers and seven listeners out there. Chime in what you think about Mark's appearance in our comment sections.
Shouldn't have said that, should I?
Probably not.
Not
you know what? You did.
Take it easy on the moneymaker. You know, I'm doing the best I can.
Until next time, I'm Morten Jensen. You're listening to the NBA show. Have a good one.